Robin Hood Radio and the Robin Hood Radio Network is proud to present Leonard Lopate at Large, lively hour-long in-depth discussions providing overviews and context to topics usually covered in partial measures. His guests include leading thinkers, scientists, artists, economists, farmers, historians, authors, and politicians. Mr. Lopate is a Peabody Award winner whose numerous honors include 3 Associated Press Awards and 3 James Beard Awards.
Welcome to Leonard Lopate at Large. I'm Leonard Lopate. Although the cost of college tuition has skyrocketed over the past few decades at a rate that greatly surpasses inflation, little of that money has gone to pay the approximately one-half of college faculties that work part-time or the non-tenure full-time employees. Many of those professors, better known as adjuncts, barely earn a minimum wage from teaching and often have to supplement their teaching salaries with other jobs. Some even have to rely on public assistance, and a UC Berkeley report found that 25% of part-time college faculty receive government aid in the form of food stamps and Medicaid. 2 CUNY adjunct professors, Thomas Smith and Chris Wright, reached out to us to discuss this subject, and it was our initial plan to simply focus on their specific pay issues. But in the interest of broadening the topic, we decided to contact 2 union representatives as well. Thomas Smith and Chris Wright join us now, along with Emily Barnett, president of ACT UAW, Local 7902. And a little later, we'll talk with Barbara Bowen, president of the Professional Staff Congress of CUNY, that's the CUNY Adjunct Union, and Chala Orpen, who was a member of the bargaining committee and an activist at the student employees at the New School. Welcome all to our show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Emily, many students and parents may assume that the majority of faculty are tenured or tenure track, but isn't the reality that students at U.S. colleges and universities are more likely to be taught by non-tenure track faculty members working in full or part-time contingent positions?
Yes, we're part of an army, actually, of temp workers in the country overall, but in universities particularly, we are often over a majority of the faculty. So at New School, we are over 80% of the faculty there, and at NYU, those are the 2 universities that our local represents. At NYU, we teach at least 60% of the courses.
But those are very different kinds of institutions, NYU and the New School.
Yes.
Does that complicate things for you as a union leader?
We negotiate different contracts with each school. But actually, it makes us stronger because we gather support from each other.
Thomas, where have you worked as an adjunct professor?
All over, but at CUNY right now, I'm teaching at BMCC, LaGuardia. I've taught at Brooklyn College. I've taught at Rutgers, Fordham, William Patterson U.
Always as an adjunct?
Always as an adjunct, yeah.
And you, Chris?
Well, I've taught at Mercy College, Wagner College, so 2 private schools here in Manhattan, and Staten Island, and also at LaGuardia and Hunter.
And I should just mention that although I'm president of the union, I also teach at New School. I teach at Parsons School of Design, which is part of the New School. And as an adjunct, I have often taught at 2 or 3 universities and a museum in the evening in order to make a living wage. I've taught at Hofstra University, Adelphi University, Nassau Community College, Suffolk Community College, and others. So it's, you know, and everybody here at the table is nodding in with understanding.
Yeah, Thomas, you also published a book?
No.
Oh, you did, Chris?
Oh, yeah, that's
called
a little...
Worker Cooperatives and Revolution. Isn't the rule in academia publish or perish? So you should be doing okay.
Well, it's not exactly an academic book. It's more of a Marxist kind of call to arms for a revolution. So, yeah.
Not going to have much luck with that one.
No.
Hasn't the tenure system been shrinking with the majority of faculty members, contingent workers who work without the protection of tenure?
That's true.
Yeah, I don't think it's because of the adjuncts. I think it's because the schools want to save money, and therefore they have, you know, instead have so many adjuncts and part-time faculty working for them, they have less benefits, we are paid less, and I think it has to do with the overall corporatization of higher ed.
Well, depending on the institution, contingent faculty can be known by any number of names: adjuncts, postdocs, TAs, non-tenure-track faculty, clinical faculty, part-timers, lecturers, instructors, non-Senate faculty. Do you prefer any of those?
All glorified names for temp work, for not being paid very much.
Yeah. Do some of them bring in more money than others?
Well, a lecturer, especially full-time lecturers, of course, get much more money. But a lecturer, I believe, will have more money frequently than an adjunct like me. I mean, for instance, right now in the CUNY system, we make $3,200. That's the base pay for teaching one course per semester. And lecturers make more than that, I believe.
Well, I think they start at $7,000, I've read recently.
Yeah.
Is it true that faculty in these positions are typically hired by the term and paid only for the hours that they spend in the classroom, not for the time that they spend with students, with evaluating student work, with class planning and preparation?
Right, we don't get paid for that.
Yeah, most of the work we do, we're not paid for.
Really. Now, tenured professors, that's just included in their salary, but they're doing a lot better.
Yes.
Or in some schools anyway.
The universities would argue that that we get the high salaries that we get because we're also being paid for the prep work and the other and communicating with students beyond the classroom. But most contingent faculty would argue otherwise.
Another problem that adjuncts usually aren't provided with office space, aren't given access to computers and photocopying services, and don't have much time to meet with their students?
Yeah, there's a real two-tier system. I think at LaGuardia, the full-timers get certain copying rights, for example, that we don't. So it's sort of like kind of an apartheid system.
Yeah, at LaGuardia, all the adjuncts share one office with barely functional computers. Some of them, you know, it's hard to print off of some of them and so on. So it's not exactly luxury.
And that's in the year 2019.
Yes.
When it's pretty easy to get a decent computer and printer.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. I think we have somewhat of a better situation at the new school in NYU.
Well, the difference between those are private institutions.
Exactly. That's mm-hmm. where I was going. Yeah. Right. And mm-hmm. we have a union that just represents the part-time faculty and the adjuncts. And we have a very strong union because we're part of the UAW. So we have negotiated some very strong contracts. We still don't really have office space, but we have access to somewhat better resources, I think.
Now you say the UAW, the United Auto Workers. How did that happen at NYU and the New School?
Well, there was a choice, and essentially the...
It used to be the Teamsters that would unionize people who had nothing to do
UFT,
with driving trucks.
Or the AFT, but the workers at both schools voted to go with the UAW. They felt it was a stronger union, and it is one of the strongest unions. It has a great history of social and economic justice. And so that's how we went to the UAW. The UAW currently has well over 50,000 workers in higher ed, and also has many other kinds of workers, legal workers, bookstores, workers in museums, workers in small manufacturing plants. So it covers a much wider gamut than most people. You know, most people simply associate the UAW with the big three.
And what about the first part of that union designation? Is it ACT or ACT?
ACT, we think of it as standing for Academics Come Together. But we also have two new units coming in SENS, which are the student employees of New School, the academic student workers, and we're just going to begin bargaining for the student health services employees.
And we'll be talking later about SENS.
Yes.
We can only get so many people in this studio at any given time, unfortunately. I've heard one other problem for adjuncts is they're vulnerable to dismissal if things like readings assigned or ideas expressed in the classroom offend a student, an administrator, a donor, or a legislator. And sometimes if the students don't get a grade that they expect, they complain.
I've been dismissed or laid off because the full-timers, it's written in the contract, they can't be dismissed on the basis of student evaluations. But I was let go at one of the community colleges for precisely that.
What had you done that was so terrible?
It seemed to the students like I was going to give them bad grades.
Uh-huh.
I didn't. But that they had filed into the department chair's office and complained. So
they said this is a tough professor.
Yeah, that was enough.
Are teaching assistants usually given credit toward a degree? Because they're working for free, aren't they?
I believe teaching assistants do. When I was a teaching assistant in grad school, I mean, I did make money doing that. That was in Chicago, but I think it's the same everywhere. You make some money for that. I don't think you get credit for courses as a, just because you're a TA.
Now, Thomas, you've taught in both public and private institutions. Are they pretty much the same in what we're discussing?
In terms of pay rate, they're pretty much comparable. I think that at Fordham, they get paid higher. I think it's like $4,100 now at Fordham. Other places where we only get $3,200, $3,300 per course as a minimum.
Well, isn't tuition a lot lower at the CUNY schools than it is at private colleges or universities?
I'm sure it is.
When I went to Brooklyn College and Hunter, all I paid was lab fees. That doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
It's a little different now, I guess. But, it certainly is lower than, say, where I went to school at Wesleyan University. It's exorbitant, the tuition there. But even differences or differentials between other public universities and CUNY, at Rutgers, for example, the adjuncts get paid about $5,200, and here we get paid $3,500 at most per course.
And I think in California, they get $8,000 per course.
Now, New York is more expensive than those other two places,
mm-hmm.
but people are getting paid less?
Yeah, it's completely absurd. And it's the richest city, one of the richest cities in the world, and we're making virtually poverty wages.
And it's also seasonal labor. So come January, I was really lucky to get two courses, winter intensive courses this year. But I still had to borrow from friends heavily to get through January. And then the summer, unless you have courses, which are very nice gifts from people
right.
who like you, might as well go home.
It's unlikely that adjuncts are going to be assigned classes in the summer sessions.
BMCC, nobody that I know ever gets a summer course. The full-time faculty get those courses. LaGuardia, it's a lot better. You do get courses as an adjunct.
So each one of the, even the public schools, works on a different system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. if they're
despite, but their funding all comes from the same place, doesn't it? I guess the city and the state.
Yeah, well, Rutgers, of course, it's in New Jersey, and then, for instance, in University of Connecticut, they get paid about $4,700 per course. Adjuncts get paid, so I guess in different states, yes, there will be different pay levels, but as I understand, in New York. The private schools, the private colleges make, universities make much more generally, the adjuncts there for private schools. I'm not sure if other public universities in New York, aside from CUNY, what the pay level is for adjuncts.
You don't know what they pay Columbia adjuncts.
Columbia, for instance, no.
No, I've never taught there.
No. Uh-huh. it's probably more, though.
But NYU is one of the wealthiest schools in America. What's the situation there, Emily?
Well, we when the union came in, the the adjuncts experienced huge increases in their wages. Some of their wages jumped by 20%. Some of the faculty doubled the amount they got in wages. Right now, if you're teaching a lecture class, you're going to get about $6,000 per course. That's approximate, and less if it's a non-credit course, less if it's a studio course.
Wait. Thomas sighed when he heard that $6,000.
Well, we have God.
Surprise.
We have a strong not only do we have a strong union, but we have a strong union because we have really strong support, not only from the UAW, but from the faculty at both universities as well. And we, you know, we fight hard, and when we fight, we win. We've had a history of great wins at bargaining. We have health insurance subsidies for many faculty. We have annuity, so that's something for your retirement. We have a good dispute and grievance procedure. We have guaranteed annual raises. These all have to be fought for every time we renegotiate a contract because the universities want to pull back completely. So it's not something that's that we can count on.
I'm speaking with Emily Barnett, the president of ACT UAW Local 7902, and with two adjuncts at the CUNY system, Thomas Smith and Chris Wright. This is Leonard Lopate at Large on WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM. So in the case of NYU, people are actually getting health insurance? Because
yes.
that is a rarity for non-tenured professors, isn't it?
Yes. Well, in our contracts, in our contracts, we fight hard for health insurance. Not everybody gets it. So, for instance, at NYU, if you want to get a subsidy for health insurance, you have to work at least 56 contact hours over the academic year, and at New School, you have to have worked there for a year and be slated to work the following year. But yes, this is something that we fought hard for. And in fact, the last time we negotiated the NYU contract, we succeeded in lowering that amount of contact hours that you needed for the initial subsidy for health insurance from 84 to 56, I believe, or 54. I think it's 56. So that was, you know, another win for us.
I've read that a number of schools, mostly public community colleges, elected to restrict the hours that adjunct faculty are allowed to work in order to avoid the Affordable Care Act requirement that they'd have to provide health insurance to their employees. More than 200 schools have set limits on adjunct working hours. Is that the case at the CUNY schools?
Yeah, as far as I know, I'm allowed to teach, for instance, three courses at Hunter, but then only one more course at LaGuardia. So there's a limit on the number of courses I can teach per semester, yeah.
But they consider all part of the same system?
Yeah.
That's imposed by the union. There was a time when we could easily get waivers for that. But the union officials sort of suppressed that, and because, I don't know why. I'm not going to speculate. We do get health insurance at CUNY if we teach a minimum of two courses per semester. If we only get down to one course, if we're going to have only one course, then we lose it.
Now, you say teaching two courses at how much a course?
How much we get paid? Yeah, it's about $3,200 or $3,500.
So we're talking about $7,000 for a semester.
Yeah, for two courses.
You cannot live on that.
No, I mean, that's why so many adjuncts, for instance, I have to do a lot of private tutoring on the side, and I have to, you know, hop around from campus to campus scrape together some kind of living wage.
And I'm a bookkeeper. But I try to get part-time work, but then there's this conflict between, you know, I want to give my bookkeeping client enough hours to satisfy them, but then that detracts from my ability as a professor to provide my students hours, so I usually end up losing the bookkeeping job, and then I'm back out on the street. You know.
Well, Ivanka Trump just recently said that you should just be happy that you're working at a good job and there's no need to have a minimum wage.
That's right.
So we have something similar at New School. We have a baseload that the school is obligated to give people once they've been there 11 semesters. That baseload varies depending on certain criteria. The union negotiated that as a floor to the amount of courses you could teach. The university is taking the approach that that is a ceiling in most cases, and they are very... it's very unusual that they will allow somebody to teach more than that. So even if you have something in the contract that guarantees you some job security, the university will still try to find ways around it. The less courses you teach, the less invested you are in the university, the less responsibility and money that, you know, the less responsibility the obligations that the university has to provide benefits. So they have no vested interest in giving us more courses.
Now, how much are they charging for these courses? And how many students in a class? You don't know?
I don't know per course. I know the tuition at New School is huge. It's probably around 50,000. Don't quote me on that. It could be a little less. It could be more. And it's also, you know, huge at NYU as well.
Maybe we should invite some listeners to join in who do know the answers to these questions. Our number here is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. If you are an adjunct who wants to add something to this conversation, or if you're a student at one of the local universities and can tell us just how much you actually wind up paying and what you thought your teachers were being paid.
Well, whatever it is they're paying at the CUNY system, for instance, it's too much because, you know, the...
You mean the students?
The students, whatever the students are paying for tuition, they're in. Again, it's one of the wealthiest states in the country, one of the richest cities in the world. I mean, if there were the political will, they could easily, for instance, raise the millionaire's tax to provide more funding to CUNY, so that would lower the tuition. They could easily, you know.
Who is really funding it? Is it just the city?
The city and the state.
Uh-huh. We went through decades and decades where tuition, there was no tuition, it was free. Mm-hmm. Through the Great Depression, people got in.
At Brooklyn College and Hunter grad school in the 60s, and I just paid lab fees.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
I don't know when that changed, but
70s.
It hasn't been because of any economic need. It's been a political sort of agenda in the last 40 years.
And I've read that states have been cutting higher education funding in all over the country. This is not unique to New York. We have a call,
right.
And WBAI, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to say, this is very interesting. I had a conversation the other day with a friend, and we're trying to figure out where is all the money going, because we can't figure it out. We're parents. And my daughter graduated from NYU maybe 5 years ago, and it was $65,000 a year for tuition that had nothing to do with dorms or books or anything like that. And I was absolutely shocked. I didn't know that the cost was that much until she told me that was the loan amount that she had to take out. And so, and for undergraduate, when she first started, it was over $55,000. So I'm quite sure now it's way more than that. I'm really shocked that the teachers don't get more.
Well, we'll ask in a moment where the money does go. But I keep on getting these robocalls from some group that says, we will help you pay your student loan. They just assume that anybody who has a telephone, has still owes on their student loans.
Yeah. Well,
$65,000, that was how long ago?
She graduated in 2012 with a bachelor's, and then in 2013 with a master's. So, yeah, so you add that up, and I was saying, in my day, I went to Hunter, and it was free, so I just don't get so much money, and the faculty is not getting the money, so I'm not quite sure. Is it development? I don't know.
I'm going to ask our guests, okay? Administrators.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, by the way, our number again is 212-209-2877. I've read that it's a combination of the top administrators and often the sports program. USC's president. Now, USC is a state college. It's not a private college. Mm-hmm. Its president earns almost $1.6 million a year, and its athletic director, Pat Hayden, in 2013, so it's probably higher now, earned $2.5 million. And that's in contrast to what's being paid to the 65% of its faculty that are adjuncts.
Yeah, yeah. It's the chancellor of CUNY makes a little less. He's about $700,000, I think, plus a lot of perks and all this. But yeah, administrators get a ton of it. I think some of it goes to building some facilities. Probably a lot goes into sports programs and so on.
Well,
and
we also
public relations.
We offered General Petraeus, I think, to teach at the War College at an astronomical sum of income. Plus, he had a free apartment, I believe. So that was a real celebrity income he got.
And that is important. If somebody won a Nobel Prize, obviously, that person is going to be paid a lot better.
But he hasn't done much that would earn, in my opinion, that sort of a salary.
In fact, he kind of resigned in disgrace, didn't he? Well,
that's right.
You know, we would also like to know, when we're opposite the administrators at the bargaining table, we would also like to know where all this money is going. But we do know some things. We know that at the new school that they spend proportionately more than other comparable institutions on non-student components of the educational process, such as financial, communication, and the administrators. The president makes $1.3 million. Hmm. I believe he was, I don't know if he's still, but at least a couple of years ago, he was in the top 10 of the amount that presidents earn. And
that's the new school.
And that's at the new school.
Which started as an idealistic institution
yes,
after World War II.
John Dewey, Charles Beard, a lot of progressive thinkers.
Wilhelm Reich.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of the emigres from the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, right. The university in exile.
Yes.
They've
come a long way.
They have come a long way, and you know, they're basically looking at students as customers. And that I think accounts for a lot of the, of the kind of pushback that faculty often get.
We have another call coming in. Let's take it. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi. Can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I'm actually just driving home from Lehman College in the Bronx. I'm a CUNY adjunct for the last 15 years. And, it's really nice to have somebody actually bring attention to this because people have no idea how much adjuncts struggle financially and how much they give to their students every single week, you know? And my husband and I are both CUNY adjuncts. He works at BMCC in Lehman and I work at Lehman in the Bronx. And it's just amazing. Even though we get insurance, we're really underinsured because if you get sick and you can't work, you get your insurance taken away. When I had both my kids, I didn't have them in the summer, so it was during a semester. So I lost my insurance on my due date, you know. So
oh
I just think I love my students and I love teaching at Lehman. And I, you know, I can't imagine leaving, but it's so hard to make a living. And the longer you do it, the harder it is to find something else to do, you know.
Right.
So what do you do to augment the piddling wages you receive?
I mean, I teach yoga, which is also very low wage. And and we just kind of scrape by. We have two kids, you know. We take summer work where we can get it, but like your two speakers from CUNY were saying, it's almost impossible to get summer work. So we don't get paid in January, because a lot of listeners might not know that, and we don't get paid in June, July, and August. We only get paid during the semester unless you can get a winter intensive or unless you can get a summer course, which is really difficult. I have a friend that teaches at Baruch, and she was getting summer courses, and suddenly they took it away, and she had to sue the school so that she could get unemployment.
Wow.
Because we also aren't allowed to apply for unemployment because we're not, full-time salaried workers.
That's right.
And I wanted to say one more thing really quick. The PSC, our union, fought so hard to get like a three-year, like if you've worked there a long time, then you get this three-year, you know, sort of contract where they have to give you more benefits and things like that. But, you know, I have been working in the English department, but through a special program called Freshman Year Initiative. I teach required classes that every freshman student has to take. But because it's not officially, like it's English department, but through a special program, the PSC or the university, I guess it's CUNY, refused to give some of us that three-year thing that they fought so hard to get. So I just feel like CUNY always finds a way to take advantage mm-hmm. of the adjunct, you know.
Thank you so much for your call. Chris, are you and Thomas, or Thomas, members of the CUNY Struggle Caucus? Is that different from a union? Thomas, you look like you want to answer.
I'm not a member. I believe it was a slight. Chris would know more about
it's
that.
It's a caucus in the union, just like the 7K or strike is another sort of caucus group in the union.
Which is a strike likely? Because there have been strikes in other parts of the country.
Right. There's a whole new wave of strikes making a lot of big gains for educators across the country. And so it's a little early to say at this point if it's likely or not. There's still negotiations going on, but we're trying to build up momentum for if the administration will not give us 7K per course for going on strike.
You're listening to Leonard Lopate at Large. We are joined now by Chala Orpin and Barbara Bowen. Welcome to our show. Barbara's by phone. Barbara, hello. You hear us?
Hello. Yes, I can. Thank you.
Now, Barbara, the cost for undergraduate students at public universities have been nearly four times higher than the amount that was paid in the 1980s. Is that true of CUNY schools as well?
Tuition has gone up tremendously at CUNY, and I first want to say how glad I am to have a chance to talk about this and also to hear from the adjuncts on your show and the wonderful caller in from Lehman. It's critically important that the public pays attention to this issue, and the issue in the public universities is, as one of your speakers there said, is a political decision. It's not a lack of money. It's not anything natural. It's simply a political decision at the federal level to begin with, and then state and city levels, not to put in sufficient funding for public higher education. And I'll stick to CUNY because that's where I teach and where I'm the president of the union that represents the adjuncts and the full-time faculty at CUNY. And the issue is systemic. There are bad decisions by individual colleges and whatever, but the really deep issue is that the funding base for public support for a public university has diminished and has shrunk considerably in New York. It started with the imposition of tuition after open admissions and the fiscal crisis in New York City in 1975. It coincided with the change in the demographics at CUNY as CUNY became a university that had more and more people of color. The funding base has shrunk, and we now have a situation where student tuition has risen 63% just since 2008.
What is typical tuition at the CUNY
school? For the four-year school is $6,700.
Uh-huh.
And when you compare that to NYU, it's not going to sound big, but when you realize that nearly half of CUNY students have family incomes of under $20,000 and nearly two-thirds have family incomes under $30,000, then you see how big that amount is. So the issue is a lack of political will to invest so that students in higher education, this is public and private, but we see it so intensely in the public sector, so that there is the money needed to teach them. And one of the most dramatic signs is the switch from decently paid, and I won't even say well paid because the full-time faculty salaries are not nationally competitive, but decently paid full-timers with job security. Universities in private and public sector have switched to dramatically underpaid part-timers with no job security or very little job security. And that's a systemic switch made to save money by cutting the biggest cost of any university, which is a labor cost. So that's why we are fighting in our university, and a couple of your speakers mentioned it. The union is leading a fight to raise the minimum adjunct pay per course to $7,000.
Some years back, I was invited to be the speaker at both, at different times, the graduation ceremonies at Brooklyn College and Hunter College. And people came up to me and told me that they were the first members of their families to go to college. And it was only possible because of the city university. But now many of them are finding themselves priced out. Chala, I want to get to you, but we have another person who's been hanging on the phone for a while, and I want to take care of that call. Our number here is 212-209-2877. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Leonard. Thank you for your excellent, interesting programming. I'm just curious, with all these well-educated professors, adjunct professors in the area, speaking of New York area now, has there been a flight to the public high school system and elementary system where they could at least earn a decent wage? I thought now that CUNY is now tuition-free. I thought Cuomo instituted that.
It's not tuition-free.
Can I speak to that? Very interesting that the caller has the impression that CUNY is tuition-free. That was a presentation of how tuition is by the governor. In fact, CUNY is not tuition-free. It's $6,700 at the four-year schools.
How does it compare to the SUNY schools, so the other schools?
SUNY is, I think, $6,870, something like that. It's quite close. Tuition's lower in the community colleges at CUNY, but the caller was referencing the Excelsior Scholarship, which Governor Cuomo announced with big fanfare 2 years ago, and in fact only fewer than 2% of CUNY students benefit from the Excelsior Scholarship, and I think about 7 or 8, under 10% at SUNY. So while that had a lot of publicity, it has very stringent requirements, and it covers only 2% of students. Many CUNY students do get financial aid, but the financial aid doesn't cover additional fees, and fees can be high for lab fees that you talked about, Leonard, but also books, which are incredibly expensive. Many students are choosing every day between paying for their subway ride and lunch. Many faculty regularly bring in lunch for students. When a family income is $20,000 and you've stretched and you're not getting the income from the student who might otherwise be working, there's a lost income there too, and the costs are just nearly unbearable for a lot of students, even if they're getting tuition covered.
Thomas, you made a face when that caller suggested that you teach high school. You have to get a degree to teach in high school.
You have to get an MA.
And you don't have to get that if you teach on a college level. You just have to know your topic.
It's like what the caller from Lehman College, the adjunct, was saying. The longer you're in this business, and we dedicate our lives to becoming professors, I have a PhD, it's harder to go through the hoops that you have to run for the other professions that you might have otherwise taken, and now you have to switch. And how much income do you have to make that switch?
Now, Charles, I want to get you into this conversation. You're on the bargaining committee that's about to begin negotiations for a first contract for another group called Shens.
I'm actually in the I was in the bargaining committee, and we recently ratified our first contract in December 2018. It's called Student Employees at the New School under UAW as well. So we're part of the United Auto Workers, also part of the same local that Emily is the chair of.
And what kinds of teachers are covered by that?
We cover academic workers, including teaching fellows, teaching assistants, research assistants, course assistants, and lecturers.
And when you're bargaining mm-hmm. with the new school, what are their arguments for not giving you any money?
So just to give you a background, we started our process in fall 2014, actually. So it took us about over 4 years to come to this point of having our contract ratified. Their main argument is that there was limited resources, but actually that when we look at the numbers and how much is allocated to the academic student workers, we are a very small percentage of what they prefer to, you know, spend on. So it's a matter of priority, and the argument has always been that they are prioritizing and they care about their academic workers, which they don't want to recognize as workers anyways, because they assumed, and that has been their case with NLRB, that, you know, what we are doing is actually training, not, we're not workers.
So there's a terminology issue here.
Because most of the private university student workers were not considered under the purview of NLRB since 2004 with the Brown case. So this has recently been changed, and we petitioned with NLRB as well in 2016, and we got approved for it. But it took us a long fight involving lawyers and new school hiring very highly paid lawyers fighting us throughout the process.
Well, we heard earlier that the president of the new school is very well paid. A report from the Institute of Policy Studies a few years ago found that between 2005 and 2011, the number of adjunct faculty increased 22% faster at the 25 state schools with the highest paid CEOs. So there is some kind of corollary. Some faculty do get $100,000. Others get $20,000. Mm-hmm. There's a big gap there. Should we take another call? BAI, you're on the air.
You are talking to me?
Yes.
Okay, so my name is Stefan. And first, as an immigrant, I want to say I'm shocked hearing those numbers. I'm just shocked. But my question is...
Well, where are you an immigrant from?
From Poland.
Uh-huh. And is the situation different in Poland, which has other problems?
It's basically free. Mm-hmm. I mean, education, so different story. You know that, as I know. But my question would be like that. How does it affect the quality of the faculty? I don't mean your guests are bad teachers, but, you know, you usually get what you pay for.
May I jump in on that?
Cause sure,
I think
please.
It's, Barbara, this is a very good question. I mean, you just heard one of the adjuncts who's in the studio say that he has a PhD. I mean, the adjuncts who teach at CUNY have advanced degrees. If the structure of employment in the university system and all of academic labor were different, these are people who would have full-time jobs and have tenure. Just to take the example of CUNY, when CUNY's student enrollment was at nearly the level it is now, and actually it's 25,000 more than it was then, but when it reached a high, there were 11,500 full-time faculty members. Now there's 7,500. So that means that 4,000 full-time positions that really should be there just at our one university are in fact being divvied up among, let's say, 12,000 adjuncts. And those adjuncts have almost invariably the qualifications to be in full-time positions. And the other issue about quality, I think one of the speakers referred to, that if you're being paid $3,500 for a course and you then have to work as a bookkeeper or you then have to work as a dog walker, you have to run right out of your class and go do your other part-time job. And every adjunct I've talked to has said that that is a cruel circumstance for oneself. We're dedicated as teachers, and you're structurally not able to give your best to your students. And that's a horrible position to be in. So I think there are issues of quality that have to do with the structure of employment, not with the people we have. And in CUNY, we're incredibly lucky because we're in New York City, and that's why I think CUNY's gotten away with having so many adjuncts, because there are so many fabulous, talented people in New York City who are drawn to teaching, but also drawn to what CUNY means and what CUNY means as a working class, immigrants, people of color university that has a really important history. So I think the question is right, but we've got to look at it in terms of the structure of employment.
Chala, what do you teach at the New School?
I actually currently work as a research assistant. Many of my friends who are part of our unit teach mostly undergrad courses throughout New School from Lang to Parsons.
But I'll bet you weren't surprised when you heard what our caller said about being an immigrant who is surprised by the situation here.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I'm originally from Turkey, and I studied at one of the best public universities for free before I moved abroad to undertake my graduate studies. So yeah, it is kind of, I understand totally the feeling. And I think in terms of like what has been said in terms of the quality, I also would like to say most of my friends and my colleagues work 3 to 4 jobs to make means end. So,
is the caller still there?
Yeah.
Do you want to add anything before we go to one more caller? Oh, we have a new caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm Chris from Manhattan. My late brother worked on Capitol Hill. He was an economist, and he told me that whenever they raised the Pell Grant, the college just raised their tuitions.
Mm-hmm. That's true. The Pell Grant is the federal program. Right. Pell Grant is the federal program that for assistance, tuition assistance, and it has historically not kept up with tuitions. There was a time when it came close to, I think, the original benchmark for an average, certainly for a public university, was that the Pell Grant would cover all of it and even come very close to covering the private school tuition. And, I mean, Pell Grants have not risen as fast at all as tuition, and especially at private universities. That's absolutely true.
Have we heard absolutely anything true. From Betsy DeVos on all of this?
Betsy DeVos has spent a lot of time trying to loosen the protections for students who attend for-profit universities. She has worked very hard to undo some of the important work that the Obama administration did. Actually, the most important things they did in higher ed were on curtailing the really bad abuses of the for-profit universities, and DeVos has been trying to dismantle that.
We have about 2 more minutes to go on this show, and I suspect that there are things that my guests want to say that they haven't been able to say. So should we start with you, Thomas?
Well, I would say I really want 7K to survive, and I want to know that what my union is going to do about getting that demand fulfilled. I think it has to come to, if necessary, a strike. We can't lobby Democrats. Who are often in the forefront of cutting the budgets for secondary as well as higher education.
Emily?
Well, I think when we fight, we win. And unions are a real lever in terms of making changes that benefit adjuncts, part-time faculty, academic student workers, workers across all areas, and I think we need strong unions. We have some of them, and we're going to continue to fight.
Chala?
Yeah, following up on that, I would say the main reason we were able to get this contract ratified was thanks to the threat of strike, and that we were organized really well. So we're just going to continue staying in solidarity with everyone in the academic sphere.
And Barbara, you get the last word.
Okay. I agree. When we fight, we win. This union, the last round of bargaining, did a strike authorization vote and used all that power to try to leverage things that we needed. In the past, we've won health insurance for adjuncts and pensions and stable appointments and other things. This is a very hard thing to crack. And I ask everyone who's listening, every adjunct, everyone in New York City, you all have a stake in getting decent pay for the people who teach the future of New York City. So join us and support us in our fight for increased adjunct pay.
And thank you all so much for being on our show. Thomas Smith, Chris Wright, Emily Barnett, Barbara Bowen, and Chala Orpin. It's been a real pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And I'm sure that our listeners learned all sorts of things that they wouldn't have known otherwise.
That's probably true of all your shows.
And that brings us to the end of today's show. My great thanks to Thomas Smith, Chris Wright, Emily Barnett, Chala Orpin, and Barbara Bowen. A special thanks to Elizabeth Oram for her input, to Reggie Johnson, who was at the audio controls, to Charlie Morrow, who composed our theme music, and to my executive producer, Jesse Lent. Leonard Lopate at Large comes to you on Saturdays at 4 and Tuesdays at noon. You can subscribe to Leonard Lopate at Large podcast on iTunes and by clicking on Robin Hood Radio's archive program site, which is robinhoodradio.com. You can also check out Leonard Lopate at Large Facebook page. We hope to see you next week.